And the other thing they pointed out was that we're actually in the middle of contract renegotiations, and we're trying to get everybody that has cable in this country to pay us a dollar more, which means that in 1 year alone, Fox News will make about $980 million more dollars in profit if they're successful. And they're supposed to be renegotiating the very same time that the trial was happening. So for them, it was worth paying it just to get it over with so that they could focus on these contract renewals, because honestly, the contract renewals are worth more to them in profit than this particularly significant settlement. So Fox made sure everybody knew that yesterday so that the markets could be reassured that they're going to be just fine.
Angelo Carasone, we want to thank you so much for being with us.
Thank you.
President of Media Matters. I'm Amy Goodman. Thanks for joining us.
You are listening to KBOO Portland.
KBOO Community Radio is a proud co-sponsor of Soul Queens and Blues Kings, making a real concert on Sunday, May 7th from 4:30 p.m. to 7:30 p.m. at the Aladdin Theater in Portland. Norman Boogie Cat Sylvester and Band bring together regional rhythm and blues acts for a night of music and dance as a benefit for healthcare for all Oregon. Again, that's Soul Queens and Blues Kings making a real concert on Sunday, May 7th from 4:30 p.m. to 7:30 p.m. at the Aladdin Theater, 3017 Southeast Milwaukee Avenue in Portland. More information can be found at kboo.fm on the right side of the homepage under Community Events.
And now, your daily volunteer-produced community newscast, the KBOO Evening News.
Coming up on the KBOO Evening News, angry words from an Oregon congresswoman after Republicans vote on banning trans athletes from girls' sports.
I am deeply concerned about the increase in and apparent normalization of attacks against trans students. Contrary to what my Republican colleagues say, this legislation will diminish civil rights.
An update on the COVID pandemic in Oregon and the fate of the monarch butterfly, why it's under threat. Good evening. This is the KBOO Evening News for Thursday, April 20th, 2023. I'm Annette Newell. Thanks so much for joining us tonight. The House of Representatives voted today to pass a GOP-led bill that would ban transgender athletes from women's and girls' sports at federally funded schools. Oregon Congresswoman Suzanne Bonamici sharply criticized Republicans in Congress for this bill.
A bill that puts politics over participation. I am deeply concerned about the increase in and apparent normalization of attacks against trans students. Contrary to what my Republican colleagues say, this legislation will diminish civil rights, discriminate against students, and dismantle relationships of trust between students and their coaches and educators. Trans rights are human rights, and denying trans students the opportunity to play on sports teams that are consistent with their gender identity sends a clear message to those students that they don't matter. If my Republican colleagues are interested in protecting women and girls, I have a long list of priorities and I'm eager to work on. Let's pass common sense gun violence prevention legislation. Let's pass legislation protecting reproductive freedom. Let's pass paid family leave and medical leave and close the gender pay gap. We should be working together to create opportunities for every student to thrive, with a focus on those who are most vulnerable, especially trans youth. I want every trans student out there to know I see you and I will never stop fighting for you. I urge my colleagues, show some humanity, stop attacking trans people and vote no on this bill.
That's Oregon Congresswoman Suzanne Bonamici. The bill's not expected to be taken up by the Democratic-controlled Senate, and the White House has issued a veto threat. Conservatives are fighting against some school policies at a number of different educational levels in a number of different ways and different states. KBOO's Josh Salem takes a look at the story.
A Florida state board just approved an expansion of what is called the Don't Say Gay law. The Florida House passed bills on gender transition treatments, bathroom use, and keeping children out of drag shows. Florida's Board of Education approved a ban on classroom instruction about sexual orientation and gender identity in all grades. This was an expansion of the law that banned such teaching up to grade 3. The rule change would ban lessons on sexual orientation and gender identity from grades 4 to 12 unless required by existing state standards or as part of a reproductive health instruction plan that students can choose not to take. Their proposal takes effect in about a month after a procedural notice period. Florida Governor Ron DeSantis' administration put forward the proposal last month as further evidence of the Republicans' heavily conservative agenda. It comes ahead of what most feel is a run at the White House. Education Commissioner Manny Diaz Jr. said this is meant to clarify confusion around the existing law and reinforce that teachers should not deviate from existing curriculums. The prohibition has drawn incredible backlash from critics. They say it marginalizes LGBTQ plus people and is so vague that it results in self-censorship by teachers. Democratic President Joe Biden has called it hateful. Also yesterday, the Florida House passed a bill making it a felony to provide gender-affirming health care to transgender minors. One Republican representative said, quote, "In the image of God, he created them, male and female. This is rock solid, irreversible, validated by science and our medical community, period. You are either male or female. This is not subject to one's opinion. It is demonstrable fact," end quote. Democrats argue that sweeping gender dysphoria in children under the rug is psychologically harmful and that parents and doctors should make decisions on treatment, not the government. The House also sent to the governor a bill that bans children from adult live performances. The DeSantis administration has already moved to pull the liquor licenses of businesses that held drag shows, alleging children were present during lewd displays. Finally, the Florida House passed a bill that would ban people from entering bathrooms other than their gender assigned at birth. Of the expansion of teacher muzzling through the Don't Say Gay law, Diaz said, quote, "We're not removing anything here. All we are doing is setting the expectations so our teachers are clear that they are to teach to the standards," end quote. In the meantime, other states are also interfering in the educational process. A bill being considered in Ohio's Senate targets diversity and inclusion efforts in what is said to be an effort to root out liberal bias in higher education. Senate Bill 83, aimed at public universities and colleges, would do the following: ban requirements for diversity and inclusion training for faculty, students, and staff, bar campus staff from going on strike, prevent universities from taking public positions on policy controversies, stipulate that institutions must encourage students and staff to form their own conclusions about controversial matters, while faculty and staff must not inculcate any points of view, create a new student evaluation process for faculty that includes a question about if they create a learning environment, quote, "free of political, racial, gender, and religious bias," end quote, and require colleges not to provide any advantage to hires or admissions based on gender, sex, race, ethnicity, sexual orientation, or religion. Jerry Serino, the Republican senator who introduced the bill, said the point is to ensure that there is a diversity of thought at Ohio colleges and universities. While the proposed bill mostly addresses public universities and colleges, private schools like Case Western Reserve would be prevented from receiving state funds if they don't comply with some aspects. Opponents say there are many examples of micromanagement in the bill that are unnecessary, and that if passed in its current form, the bill will likely make it harder to attract professors to come to Ohio. Students are raising concerns about the bill's impact on campus life. Many have lobbied for years for more cultural sensitivity in efforts to embrace diversity at college. The bill does not do anything to address more practical student concerns, such as college affordability and wanting more welcoming and safe environments for students of color and LGBTQ plus students. Deb Smith, president of the Kent State Chapter of American Association of University Professors, said, quote, "The bill prohibits acknowledging the existence of climate change, acknowledging the existence of systemic racism and sexism that continues in our society," end quote. For KBOO News, I'm Josh Salem.
The Oregon Health Authority's Dr. Dean Seidlinger gave an update on the state of the COVID epidemic this afternoon.
Today's media briefing will be our last monthly or regular COVID-19 update for the media. We, of course, stand by to restart these briefings at regular intervals if needed based on conditions with COVID and other seasonal respiratory viruses such as RSV and influenza. For now, we are closing out these regular briefings because we are confident that, thanks to increased immunity among people who have been vaccinated or previously had COVID-19, risk remains low. But risk is not non-existent. As with any infection, like influenza, whose constant but low-level presence we have come to live with, we anticipate that COVID-19 will be with us for the foreseeable future. perhaps forever. That means we will still see infections. We will still recommend wearing masks sometimes to protect people around us at higher risk of severe COVID outcomes. And some settings, such as healthcare facilities, may still have policies requiring that masks be worn. We will still need to stay up to date on COVID-19 vaccines, recommendations for which continue to evolve. Just this week, the FDA and CDC has simplified their recommendations and authorized an additional bivalent booster dose for some persons at higher risk of severe outcomes. And tragically, we will still see some deaths from COVID-19. But our outlook overall for COVID-19 continues to be good. To anyone who has been affected by COVID-19 or cared for or lost a loved one to the virus, my heart, my sorrow goes out to you. In Oregon and nationally, COVID-19 cases, deaths, and hospitalization trending downward, according to the latest Centers for Disease Control and Prevention data. On March 30th, we finally dropped below the 200 mark for hospitalizations in Oregon, which we have not seen since May of 2022. On Tuesday, April 18th, we had 172 individuals hospitalized with COVID-19 in Oregon, which was slightly higher than the week before, but still represents a steady downward trend from our recent hospitalization peak of 370 on November 29, 2022. To put that number in perspective, our highest hospitalization count during the pandemic was 1,178, which occurred on September 1st, 2021, during the Delta surge. We've come a long way. The percentage of reported COVID-19 tests results that were positive has stayed relatively flat since the start of the year, with a slight jump occurring in late March. We expect this trend to continue, particularly as new subvariants continue to evolve and enter Oregon over the next several months. One variant we are keeping an eye on is XBB.1.16. Although we're not yet seeing this variant in our sequencing data, Dr. Peter Graven's team at Oregon Health and Science University is predicting that this variant, along with a variant called XBB.1.9, will likely cause a COVID-19 infection wave similar to the recent BA.4 and BA.5 and winter waves. This variant in particular appears to evade COVID-19 immunity in some areas. Even so, the wave is expected to peak by the end of June. Keep in mind, this is a long-term forecast, at least in COVID terms, and I expect to see adjustments in the numbers over the coming months as we learn more about infection from these variants. Because of our COVID-19 outlook and our winding down from the pandemic response, we are expecting a number of changes as the federal COVID-19 public health emergency ends on May 11th, and FEMA funding for some COVID-19 activities also wraps up. Since December of 2020 and throughout the pandemic, the federal government has provided COVID-19 vaccines and therapeutics to everyone in the U.S. at no cost. With the ending of the federal public health emergency, COVID-19 vaccines will be shifting to commercialization, which means pharmaceutical companies will distribute and sell them like other vaccines. Therapeutics commercialization is product dependent with different timelines, and some are already available on the commercial market. This transition is likely to take place sometime in early fall 2023 for vaccines and by the end of 2023 for therapeutics. It will not happen overnight. Right now, there are many unknowns regarding the commercialization process. For example, we don't know what the COVID-19 vaccine and therapeutic prices will be. OHA is working with other state agencies and the CDC to ensure everyone in Oregon will have continued equitable access to COVID-19 vaccines and therapeutics once commercialization takes place.
That's the Oregon Health Authority's Dr. Dean Seidlinger. This was the deadline week to file your taxes. Oregon U.S. Senator Ron Wyden has some thoughts about that.
Let me begin by thanking the staff at the IRS for the hard work that made this the smoothest filing season in many years. Democrats made a big investment in taxpayer service with the Inflation Reduction Act, and it goes without saying that now the American people have a right to know what they got with that investment. The numbers paint a clear picture. Last year, the IRS was able to answer 15% of the phone calls it got. This year, it was 87%. The IRS answered 2 million more calls and helped 100,000 more taxpayers in person. The return backlog is now way down. The technology upgrades are helping to get the refunds out the door more quickly. So these are real, concrete improvements. Now, looking ahead, at the top of our agenda needs to be reducing the tax gap. This is money that's owed to American taxpayers and just hasn't been collected. The official estimate says that $540 billion of taxes owed go unpaid every year. Other estimates, including from Donald Trump's IRS commissioner, believe that it could be $1 trillion. These estimates are so far apart because sophisticated, wealthy tax cheats excel at hiding in the shadows. The IRS can't measure the law breaking because it doesn't have all the resources to identify it in the first place. So the bottom line is pretty clear. You cannot get at the tax gap without focusing on these wealthy tax cheats and highly complicated businesses like large partnerships. That's what Democrats have sought to accomplish with the tax enforcement funding in the Inflation Reduction Act. The IRS plan for that funding came out a few weeks ago. I'm sure members have a lot to say about it. It is clear to me that the IRS is focusing on the key issues that the law has subscribed to. The reality is there are big challenges for the Congress to address: shoring up Medicare and Social Security, child care and education for families, paid leave for workers. Both sides have made it clear they want to address the country's fiscal health. Reducing the tax gap helps create the headroom to be able to address those issues. The first priority is making it harder for wealthy tax cheats to get away with breaking the law. The next priority ought to be to make this tax season filing easier for everybody else. I think we all have heard from our constituents the last few weeks continued stories about how complicated it is, how much time it takes, how many forms. Why is all of this bureaucracy necessary? Now, the Inflation Reduction Act took an important step on an alternative. It's called free direct filing. It would provide another option for taxpayers. It is voluntary. It is something they can choose to have. A voluntary option when they're sick of the hassle and expense that comes with filing online today. There's a study underway looking at how to go about building such a system. Republicans and the tax prep lobby in the past have reacted as if this is just going to be pretty much the end of Western civilization. There used to be bipartisan interest in building a free file system that saved taxpayers and money each year. Making it easier to file was a key component, for example, of the bipartisan tax reform proposal that I wrote with Senator Dan Coats a little more than a decade ago. Seat was right down there. We put together a bipartisan tax reform proposal that included a simplified system should middle class folks want to choose it. And I am always, colleagues, going to hope that one day we can have another bipartisan proposal to include free file, the kind of idea Senator Coates and I pursued for so many years. Unfortunately, these days, too many Republicans are on the side of the big tax prep companies, the big companies that squeeze Americans for billions of dollars each year in various fees and markups. They've even objected to the organization that's conducting the free file study. I'm sure these legislators would prefer to have the tax prep lobby in charge of studying the issue to smother it from the get-go. It's always been the same pattern each time free file came up. An army of well-paid lawyers and lobbyists descends on Congress to squash it. And too many Republicans stand there, right there with them. This must not be allowed to happen again. Democrats are committed to the proposition that it shouldn't cost hundreds of dollars and many more hours of time simply to follow the law, to follow the law and to pay what you owe. When it comes to filing taxes online, the status quo is unacceptable. So these are some of the agenda items that Democrats are focused on, including reducing the tax gap by going after cheating, by wealthy scofflaws, and making tax filing easier for everybody else. Those are our priorities. Here's some of the things we're seeing from the other side. When they talk about fiscal health, they're talking about giving billionaires a free pass to cheat on their taxes. It's in the proposals. In the proposals, the billionaires get a free pass. Speaker McCarthy works overtime to rally Republicans around a plan that would gut health care and increase hunger among tens of millions of Americans. Apparently, if he doesn't get what he wants, He is willing to let this country go through a catastrophic default. And that is the operative word here, folks, default. There's a lot of lingo about debt ceilings and all these kinds of things. What's really at issue is whether this country is going to get clobbered by a default.
And that was Oregon U.S. Senator Ron Wyden. You're listening to the KBOO Evening News. Stay tuned after this newscast for Making Contact. At 6, it's Rose City Native Radio. Tonight's weather, cloudy, occasional rain showers, a low near 45. Tomorrow's weather, clouds continue, a high of 58. Today in history, on this date in 1836, the territory of Wisconsin was created. The quote of the day is from its former governor, Jim Doyle. Wisconsin's greatest strength continues to be the dedicated, hardworking people of our state. They go to work every day to pay their taxes and raise their kids with good Midwestern values. Another quote from Jim Doyle, I don't think Wisconsin should become known as a state where we shoot cats. The GOP announces proposed cuts in exchange for raising the debt limit. A moderate Republican governor calls his party's messaging horrible. And the U.S. Supreme Court postpones a decision on abortion pills until Friday. With more on the stories impacting our democracy, here's today's edition of 2023 Talks.
President Biden is skipping town to deliver a speech in Maryland rather than sitting down to address the debt ceiling. He's giving America's debt the southern border treatment. Ignore it and hope that it goes away.
On Wednesday, House Speaker Kevin McCarthy announced his plan to raise the debt limit and cut government spending, calling on Democrats to come back to the negotiating table. The Republican-backed legislation would raise the debt limit for a year but require cuts in what they call discretionary spending. It would also reclaim unspent COVID-19 funds, cancel Biden's student loan forgiveness program, and rescind IRS funding. In his rebuttal at a union meeting in Maryland, President Biden called the GOP plan the same old trickle-down economics and worse than ever.
Instead, he proposed a huge cuts in imports and very important programs that millions of hardworking and middle-class Americans count on.
Biden made clear he will not agree to the proposed massive cuts with the deadline just weeks away. Senator John Fetterman, the Pennsylvania Democrat, participated in his first Senate subcommittee hearing Wednesday since his election last year and two-month absence on the Hill due to medical and mental health complications. In the hearing about the SNAP program, Fetterman said hunger is not a Republican or Democrat issue.
We need to come together and stop playing political games with Americans' access to food.
As part of Republicans' attempt to negotiate on the national debt ceiling, they have proposed cuts to federal food assistance programs by expanding work requirements to qualify for SNAP. During a recent CNN interview, New Hampshire Governor Chris Sununu indicated he could do the job if he were to run for president in 2024. Sununu has said Republicans have what he calls a great product with limited government, local control, and low taxes. He says where the GOP falls short is in their horrible messaging.
I'm just trying to make the party bigger. I want independents. I want young voters to get on board. I want all these disenfranchised voters to get back.
Sununu, considered to be one of the most moderate GOP figures, says the Republican Party will continue to lose votes if they continue to prioritize abortion as a central issue. Robert F. Kennedy Jr., the son of former Attorney General and 1968 presidential candidate, announced his bid for the 2024 Democratic presidential campaign in Boston on Wednesday.
And I'm going to make us an exemplary democracy again.
Kennedy said he wants to challenge the connections between government and corporate powers, fight for greater economic equality, and heal the nation's political divide. Finally, the Supreme Court delayed making a decision which could prevent patients from having access to the abortion pill known as mifepristone as the justices consider the legal challenge to the medication's FDA approval. The court indicated it will act by Friday night. I'm Alex Gonzalez.
Spring cleaning can and does result in accidental poisoning. Terry D explains many products people use for cleaning can be unexpected sources of poisons.
Nearly every household is full of items that can be lethal, from bug spray to hairspray and furniture polish to lawn fertilizer. Stored improperly, some products can cause injury or even death if anyone ingests, smells, or spills them on skin or clothing. Dr. Blake Froberg says liquids like antifreeze and window washer fluid may look like sports drinks to young kids and can have some very harmful effects.
Certain lamp oils, with the summer coming up, a lot of people will have tiki torches and that lamp oil that's used in tiki torches to a young child that can look like apple juice can have very harmful effects to somebody's lungs if they get into that.
Symptoms of poisoning include nausea, vomiting, diarrhea, and rashes. Froberg adds they should be in locked cabinets inaccessible to kids. Medications can also be dangerous, with nearly 68,000 cases of kids ingesting basic analgesics or painkillers in one recent year nationally. Froberg says it is not just prescription drugs to be concerned about.
Acetaminophen, which is often sold as Tylenol, aspirin, diphenhydramine, often sold as Benadryl. So you want to pay attention to not only your prescription medications, but also to over-the-counter medications.
Froberg points out that child-resistant caps on medications may slow them down, but given enough time, a child can figure out how to remove them. I'm Terry D.
Missing and murdered indigenous people. It's a topic that's become a priority at the United Nations this week. With that story more, here's National Native News.
A group of First Nations leaders from Canada is highlighting priorities this week at the United Nations Permanent Forum on Indigenous Issues taking place in New York. Assembly of First Nations National Chief Roseanne Archibald held a press conference Wednesday with four other Native leaders. One of their top areas of concern, missing and murdered Indigenous people. Vice Chief of the Federation of Indigenous Sovereign Nations, Ali Bear, says society is targeting women, girls, and Two-Spirited Plus. She says more needs to be done to protect them.
We continue to see an increase of our Indigenous women being murdered, especially the latest case, Linda Beardy in Winnipeg, who was just recently found in a landfill. We are not trash. We are not garbage. We deserve to be valued. Traditionally, our women held high respect in our communities. And is that colonial violence that came here, that colonial mindset that came here and, you know, put us to the lowest of the hierarchy. And now we're regaining that power. We're regaining that leadership.
Bear and the other leaders are calling on Canada to implement more than 200 recommendations made after a national investigation into missing and murdered Indigenous people. Yupik and Inupiaq students from 4th to 8th grade recently competed in a native language spelling bee in Anchorage, Alaska. KNBA's Rhonda McBride has more.
New word, jingseek.
In the Yupik language, or Yuktun, jingseek is the word for little people, elf-like creatures who wear cone-shaped hats.
Jingseek, C-I-N-G-S-S-I-I-K, jingseek.
Asichtuk. Asichtuk means good. You got it right. And Nunam Ikwa's team heard that word a lot. It swept all three top spots. Elena Canoe, an eighth grader, took home the first place Yupik spelling trophy.
Feels good. Winning?
Winning for the second year in a row. Her coach and Yupik teacher Savannah Strongheart says the news made her feel a little dizzy.
I'm so excited. My goal ever since I started was to get 1, 2, 3. And this year I have 1, 2, 3. So I'm like all excited and I want to scream. Oh my goodness.
The spelling bee came full circle this year, especially for those who've been involved since it began 12 years ago. One of the students who took second place in that very first spelling bee returned as a guest speaker.
There's so many opportunities for young kids these days teaching their native language and culture.
12 years ago, Casey Jack was an eighth grader who represented the tiny Bering Sea village of Stebbins. Today, he's an adjunct professor of Yupik language at the University of Alaska Fairbanks and credits the spelling bee for sparking his passion for his native language.
One of the defining moments, I would say.
While the Yupik spelling bee had four schools involved, there was only one team for the Inupiaq language. Cameron Toktu of Brevik Mission took first place. Casey Jack applauded the school's efforts. He says he knows from personal experience how small steps can take you a long way. I'm Rhonda McBride.
Meanwhile, in Anchorage, Thursday is a big day for Native athletes who have come from around Alaska to take part in the 2023 Native Youth Olympic Games. The first day features three competitions, the kneel jump, the wrist carry, and the Alaskan high kick. The games showcase traditional Native survival skills and promote physical endurance in the wilderness. The games continue through Saturday and also include a blanket test and a pilot bread recipe contest. The games are hosted by Cook Inlet Tribal Council. I'm Antonia Gonzalez.
The decline of the monarch butterfly is causing concern among environmentalists. The essential pollinators are highlighted during this Monarch Week, as Brett Pevedo reports.
Monarchs are considered essential pollinators, contributing to the cultivation of many fruits and vegetables. But their lifespan is short, with four generations spawned in the course of a year. Those that hatch in late summer and early autumn migrate up to 3,000 miles from as far north as eastern Canada to spend winter in central Mexico. Over the last 25 years, critical milkweed habitats have been reduced, which has led to a corresponding reduction in the eastern monarch butterfly population. This time of year, monarchs migrate north to lay their eggs on milkweed plants on which their offspring will feed during their caterpillar stage. Jim McCann is the state zoologist with the Maryland Department of Natural Resources. He says restoring milkweed is essential to helping the monarch population.
It's a pretty widely adaptable native plant. We have, I think, 12 species of native milkweed that have been documented, and I would say out of those, there's probably a half a dozen that could be planted and be used as larval habitat.
He says you don't need large acreage to make an impact, and that people in suburban and rural settings can help by planting milkweed even in a small area. Last year, monarchs were classified as endangered by the International Union for Conservation of Nature. Monarchs have been impacted not only by reductions in their milkweed habitat, but also by the use of pesticides. McCann says scientists have recently made new findings.
Monarchs that are migrating are actually kind of undernourished. They're relatively low in weight. That tells us that we need to be better hosts. We need to provide better nectar sources so that when they stop over on their way south, they can refuel as needed.
To help pollinators thrive, the Maryland State Park Service has a program called Project Butterfly and Bumblebee. The project establishes native plant areas to aid conservation of butterflies, bumblebees, beetles, wasps, and other pollinators.
It kind of serves as a nice demonstration area for folks who are considering doing something on their own property, whether it's just planting a few milkweed plants or a few nectar plants, or whether they want to do something on a larger scale. They can see how, look at what locally native plants to use.
You're listening to the KBOO Evening News for Thursday, April 20th, 2023. This is a volunteer-produced newscast, and we encourage your participation. Call or text us with your breaking news stories and tips at 971-245-2158. Our remote production team for tonight's newscast includes Josh Salem, Terry D., and Brett Pevedo. The producer is Annette Newell, and our engineer is Otto. Special thanks to Public News Service and Native Voice One. The director of Evening News is Althea Billings. A podcast of this newscast is available on our website at kboo.fm/eveningnews. You are listening to KBOO Portland on 90.7 FM, K282 BH Philomath on 104.3 FM, and K220 HR Hood River on 91.9 FM. I'm Annette Newell. Glad to have you with us. All of our KBOO programs, including the evening news,